Sitting up now, trying to ease the pounding in his brain.
Blue?
Yeah. Blue. Haven't seen this shade of blue before, though.
I have. In dream.
Jack was already squatting on his feet, his ruby eyes scanning the walls and his comrades. Ryan squinted his eye and looked at the armaglass.
He's right. Saw this shade of blue in my jump dream, too.
I used to wonder if they would ever run out of colors for the armaglass. As many colors of blue as we've encountered, I guess they were starting to get desperate.
Either that or some higher authority like blue.
I recall reading a survey long ago that blue was the most popular choice for favorite color.
JB checked his weapons to make sure they'd come through safely.
Well, there you go. I always liked blue myself.
Other than seeing similar shades matching the armorglass in our dreams, either of you recognize this chamber?
No.
Sorry.
Ryan got to his feet.
Yeah, okay then. We're in new territory. Everybody awake?
He reached down and felt the butt of the Sig Sauer, still holstered and fastened down. He flicked back the strap, freeing the hand blaster for when he needed it. His other rifle was still safely strapped around his body, tucked away at his back.
Oh, define awake, lover.
The redhead was on her stomach, her arms tucked beneath her limber body.
I'll take that as a yes.
Ryan then knelt to shake his son.
Dean, you feel okay?
Dean, lying on his side, rolled over and looked up at his father. A small spot of saliva dotted one of his cheeks.
Sure. Dreamed I was back on the patch. Fell in the drink. Drowned.
I am delighted each and every one of you feels so giddy and free. I, on the other hand, feel like something tracked in on the bottom of a shoe. My left hip bone is killing me.
Roll off that damn Lama and you'll be more apt to feel better.
Alas, to roll requires strength I currently do not possess, my good Dr. Wyeth. Perhaps you might assist me?
You're gonna have to assist yourself. I got my own jump sickness to deal with.
Mildred sat up with her back against one of the blue armaglass walls. Her stomach was cramping, but it had been a while since she or any of the others had eaten. So she suspected her nausea was induced more by hunger than by after-effects from the Matran's journey.
I'm gonna take a look and see what's waiting outside the chamber. Triple red alert for everybody. JB, watch my back. The rest of you go ahead and get your blasters ready, just in case.
My dear Ryan, I doubt I currently have the strength to even hold my own pistol aloft to shoot.
You're excused then, Doc. But try and keep both eyes open. If the shit starts flying, I bet you'll find the energy to fight back.
Well said.
The old man got himself into a semi-erect, seated position, facing the chamber doorway. Stepping lightly across the floor, with JB close at hand, Ryan stopped and readied himself before trying the handle of the heavy armaglass door. It lifted smoothly in his gloved grip, and the door opened a crack. Drawing his blaster and keeping it held at his side, Ryan's single blue eye peered out carefully. Outside the Matrans, within his limited field of view, he spotted an array of digital displays and comp monitors. The comps were active, flickering in random patterns of frantic life and colored lights, the secret glowing dance that allowed each of the Matran's units around the world to operate safely and securely. Their hard drive bays were glowing with tiny yellow dancing lights, their internal drives whirring away. All of the comps outside the chamber appeared to be in full working order.
No anteroom. This Matran's opens right into the control center. Comps everywhere.
Any people?
I don't see any.
Weird. I thought the engineers usually wanted a buffer zone between the unit and the control computers.
Mildred voiced her private opinion that while the Matran's chambers were self-enclosed, nearly every one of the devices they'd encountered so far seemed to keep a smaller room and wall between master control and the units themselves. These smallish buffer rooms seemed to offer a protective layer between the forces unleashed within the self-enclosed Matran's unit and the software kept housed in the memories of the control comps, as well as serving as a simple waiting area before and after a jump. Ryan slowly continued to take in what he could see from his protected vantage point inside the gateway. Along the far wall, behind twin desks of industrial metal with off-white terminal stations and monitor cabinets, he spied a long series of familiar-looking information storage and retrieval units, as tall as a man, chattering softly to themselves. The unit data banks didn't hold his eye. The surface of the wall they were leaning against, however, did warrant a second look. They were stone walls with mortar slopped in the cracks, instead of vanadium steel alloy, and Ryan thought they looked like the interiors of a castle or keep. He found himself scanning the corners, looking for the flames of burning torches. Instead, all he saw were the fluorescent strip lights used as illumination within a redoubt or a Matran's gateway control area.
I don't like the looks of this.
But before Ryan could continue his thought, a new wrench was thrown into the gears of the situation.
Are you coming out or not?
Ryan almost fired a round from the barrel of the Sig Sauer the moment he heard the unknown speaker, but his honed instincts told him to hold off until he could learn more and determine the situation. If he closed the Matran's chamber door, the auto mechanism would initiate another jump, and multiple jumps were enough to make a person feel like walking death. Three figures came out from one side of the Matran's chamber, their presence previously hidden by one of the thick exterior armorglass walls. A single man, obviously the leader, was now standing in front of Ryan and the partially open door. The man was grinning, both hands held out, palms open and empty, in the so-called universal gesture of friendship.
I promise I won't bite.
I've heard that before.
Yes, I imagine you have. Still, you have nothing to worry about for me.
It's not you I'm worried about.
Ryan kept the bore of the Sig Sauer leveled at the heads of the two sec men, who were on a higher plane than the shorter man standing in front of them.
You mean my guards? They're here for me, not you.
The mystery man nodded toward the imposing human presence on his left, then right.
Meet Garcia and Lopez.
The two sec men flanking the speaker were large specimens, heavily muscled and solid, each a few inches taller than Ryan's 6'2". They were dressed identically in sleeveless black t-shirts, olive-green army-issue trousers, and what appeared to be regulation U.S. Army combat boots. Red headbands circled their heads. But there couldn't have been anyone more different from them than the third man standing between them. Tall, lean, and imposing, with long silver hair coming back off his forehead that gave him a dramatic widow's peak at the center of his hairline, the man looked like royalty, or what Ryan had always thought picture book royalty should look like. The mystery man's face was long and narrow, with high cheekbones that added a cultured air of elegance to his overall appearance. His eyebrows were bushy and of a stiffer, darker gray than his hair, giving his flashing eyes a shielded, hooded look, like a human bird of prey. However, it wasn't the fellow's face that gave Ryan pause. What worried him were the clothes the man was wearing. First and foremost, mental alarm bells went off when the one-eyed man spied the long white lab coat. Under the overcoat was a neatly pressed black dress shirt and dark charcoal gray trousers. Against the fabric of the black shirt was a light gray necktie with a golden lion's head for a tie tack. Ryan hadn't seen a necktie since he visited the anthill. There had been other encounters with men in formal attire, but after the chaos and the degradation of the hidden installation behind the rock faces of Mount Rushmore, Ryan had decided once and for all that the presence of ties and business suits in the Deathlands was never a good sign. The man was smiling, apparently delighted at the arrival of his new visitors, but his inviting expression wasn't as open and inviting as it might have seemed, since he felt the need for guards. The menacing hulks of the twin sec men on either side of the greeter were the deterrents that kept Ryan's gun hand steady and the muzzle of the Sig Sauer lowered in a readied but non-threatening position. Ryan knew the armorglass of the chamber would protect him in the event of a gun battle, but he really didn't want to test it under such potentially disastrous conditions.
How many of you are there inside the gateway?
About 100. Maybe more. I'm lousy at math.
Ryan's lie caused Christy and Dean to exchange grins as they listened from inside the Matran's chamber.
Tracking comps out here put your number at...
He paused to step out of Ryan's line of sight to consult a monitor screen.
7. 7 people.
Dark night, we've stepped in it now.
Not necessarily, John Barrymore. These people seem to be friendly.
Doc, you of all people should know by now that nothing is ever what it seems in the Deathlands.
While the two Outlanders were conversing, the white coat outside the armorglass door continued to try to convince Ryan.
I assure you I'm civilized. Won't you come out so we can compare notes?
Thanks, but no. Reckon I'm closing this door, so we'll be on our way.
Look! Obviously you are aware of the existence of the matter transfer units and their subsequent linked network. That ranks you and your people as being a cut above the average bloodthirsty grunts roaming the world today. We need to talk. We have to talk. Exchange information.
Not interested. Later, pal. And don't forget to write.
The latter was an expression he'd heard his own father use while Ryan was still a mere slip of a lad. As he spoke, Ryan pulled the door closed on the chamber's